Right now in India, two things are happening simultaneously and with almost equal intensity. The rich are splurging more than they have in years. Luxury car makers are looking at record sales. High-end phones are in great demand. India's biggest realtor, DLF, just sold a $1 billion luxury apartment within 3 days of launch. Exotic and expensive packaged foods and beverages are selling like hotcakes. Business class tickets to international destinations are flying off the counters, and multi-billionaires are buying the biggest business jets ever. But look to the other end of the spectrum, and it's a really different picture. FMCG companies are struggling to sell their products in villages. Motorcycles, scooters, and small cars are selling less and less. Affordable phones, gadgets, and appliances, which account for the highest volumes in the business, are now stacked up, unsold, for weeks in factories and shops. Why is this happening? Well, the rich became richer during the pandemic. They made money in markets and invested that money and made more money. And now they want to spend that money. They want to splurge. But for the rest of this large, populous country, inflation is rising, soaring. The economy slowed down in October to December, a quarter when consumption grew at its slowest pace in 9 months. Household savings have fallen to a three-decade low. Job creation is very slow.
I think it is definitely unprecedented. I've been tracking consumption for 15 years. So in my overall career, I never witnessed this level of inflation and this level of, consumption stress, if I can call it that way.
So premium market is growing. Obviously, there's a base effect. It's a much smaller pie of the market, but it's growing in a declining market. So that means, obviously, that indicates you a K-shaped recovery.
I think it's the divide between the have and have-nots is deepening, which definitely is not a very comfortable situation to be in.
We're in the middle of what some economists call a K-shaped recovery, where one segment of the economy prospers while the other languishes. And in this episode, we try to explain this phenomenon, more simply, this rapidly widening gap between India's rich and poor through three segments: packaged consumer goods, smartphones, automobiles. We also look at two other segments that are insulated from this trend. That is, they are in very high demand across all income groups and local geographies. Which are they? Hotels and restaurants. In this episode, you will hear excerpts from interviews with the top executives at two of the biggest luxury car makers in the world, the CEO of India's biggest travel portal, a seasoned consumer goods analyst, a veteran automobile dealer, the country's best tracker of phones and gadgets, and a celebrity restaurateur and chef. There's loads coming up. It's the 10th of March. I'm your host, Anirban Chaudhary. As you nurse your holy hangover and relax into a chill weekend, listen to my latest deep dive only on The Morning Brief. Let's start with a sector that straddles different segments, various strata, and several classes of the economy. Essentials like bread, milk, beverages, soaps, and toiletries are equally critical for urban and rural consumption. FMCG companies sell to the rich and to the poor. They're present in the elite and the mass markets. They are therefore a great barometer of the pressures of inflation, which, by the way, averaged 7.2% in the first half of this fiscal year compared to 5.8% in the last 2 years. Here are Suresh Narayanan, Managing Director of Nestle India, and Hindustan Unilever CEO Sanjeev Mehta during a conference call with analysts post their earnings of the October-December quarter.
The urban story for Nestle India continues to be strong. So that is a number that we are quite confident of. Town class 2 to 6, which is really the less than 100,000 population, is where you find that the growth, while still positive, has come down from 13% to 5%. And this is where the pricing impact of some of our small packs, especially in the rurals category, has had some impact. There is a big question mark on rural India and rural growth.
Now, talking about FMCG market growth from urban and rural lens, urban markets have continued to lead the growth. Rural has shown some signs of improvement, with December quarter growth higher than growth in September quarter, and the last 12 months.
Like Narayanan and Mehta, the chiefs of ITC, Godrej Consumer Products and Marico alluded to the same story in their post-earnings calls. Growth in urban markets, lagging demand in smaller cities and villages.
There is a differentiated growth trajectory, what we find in the mid to premium versus the mass markets in India across multiple consumption segments currently. Whether it is discretionary, whether it is FMCG, consumer staples, whether it is liquor, whether it is even cigarettes, for example, you know, so we do find that, you know, across the board. So that's a starting point.
That's Manoj Menon, head of research and consumer analyst at ICICI Securities, who's been tracking this sector for a decade and a half. According to Nielsen IQ data, India's FMCG industry grew at 7.6% in the October to December quarter, down from a 9.2% increase in the previous quarter, that's July to September. The report said that one of the indicators of this impact on consumption was that consumers were shifting to smaller packs. Is this significant? Very. In fact, it's the best example to understand the story that we are trying to tell today. So in October-December, Nestle raised the price of its 35-gram packet of Maggi noodles, also called Maggi Chotu. The company raised it by 2 rupees to a total of 7 rupees. What do you think happened as a result of the 2 rupees hike? Growth in Nestle's sales volumes slowed down that quarter. Why? Because low unit packs account for nearly a fifth of Maggi's portfolio sales and competitors did not follow Nestle in increasing prices of their small packs. Consumers shifted. Just how fragile is consumption demand at this point to be impacted by a mere 2 rupee increase in a packet of 2-minute noodles? Isn't this worrisome?
Anirban, I completely agree with you. See, I think the beauty of India, it is that it is probably one of the most heterogeneous markets probably in the world, because we got very rich and we got very poor, right? And the averages doesn't really tell you anything. So in that context, can while 2 rupees in increase from, let's say, 12 to 14 might look very, very minor for a large set of, let's say, the audience. The fact of the matter is that, you know, there are two aspects there. The point number one, you know, for FMCG, there is significant throughput still happens through the wholesale channel, not just the direct retail channel. Now, at a wholesale level, if there are competitors who are willing to offer that, let's say, 1 rupee cheaper product, etc., the wholesaler will pick it up. The second point is the example which I was telling you about, let's say, whether it's urban poor or rural poor. The context is when there is finite budget and there are choices to be made. From a wholesale channel, I told you the example, and also from a retail point of view. So I think it is not just 2 rupees. It is essentially the balancing of the budget for that particular category at a mass level is what gets reflected in the overall performance.
Manoj says he's never seen something like this.
It is definitely unprecedented. I've been tracking consumption for 15 years. I started my career around the Lehman era. Now, in my 15-year career, I've not seen this. I used to work for Unilever previously, but there was no cyclicality, you know, in those days also. So in my overall career, I never witnessed this level of inflation and this level of, let's say, consumption stress, if I can call it that way. It is unprecedented in that sense, which means I don't have a tech, you know, let's say a playbook to fall back and say that, oh, this happened in that era. Hence, it should happen exactly the same way this time, right? No, there is no playbook available for me, except for something which I'd have read and understood or from my seniors, etc., right? So it is unprecedented.
I asked Manoj to explain to me just how the current level of inflation is creating so much pressure on consumption.
During times of high inflation, let's say, for example, edible oil prices went up 2x in a few months back, till a few months back rather. It is now kind of cooled off a bit. Fact of the matter is that, you know, however rich or however poor an individual is or household is, the quantum of, let's say, salt or a quantum of an edible oil, etc., is something which is, you know, very less price elastic because you need that quantum, let's say, for your survival, correct? Mm-hmm. The limited point what I'm trying to say is that what we call it as essential goods, when those inflation actually happen, there is definitely a requirement for the housewife to ration, let's say, where she wants to spend the money, whether it is urban poor or rural poor.
Also, are FMCG companies focusing too much on premiumization just because urban demand is great? Shouldn't they focus more on the mass market also?
When was the last time, you know, from any of the larger listed companies, you heard them talking about, let's say, launching a product for the mass market and kind of, you know, we want to grow volumes, etc. Now, I think there is a common narrative here, which is followed by every FMCG company in the listed space, almost every, is that they want to focus on premiumization. Nothing wrong in it. But when you follow that strategy, And when you're faced with times like these, when you're hit with significant, you know, inflation, from a consumer point of view, the mass market will suffer. See, what I'm saying is that, yes, there is a pain in the mass market from a macro point of view. But the question is also that, does the companies have got enough products and solutions addressing that at this point? I think it's a mix of both. I don't think we can't just blame macros. It's also to do with the timing factor of the strategies followed by the large listed FMCG companies.
From FMCG to something that was once considered a discretionary or optional purchase, but now is an essential: mobile phones. India had 1.2 billion mobile phone users in 2022. That's 86% of a country that's well on its way to becoming the world's most populous nation. Of the 1.2 billion, smartphone users were more than 600 million. But unlike the FMCG sector, the smartphone market shrank in 2022 by 10%. Even in the shrinking market was the same story. Entry-level models plummeted, premium ones surged. Navkinder Singh is Associate Vice President at IDC, a research firm that tracks all connected devices: phones, computers, laptops, tablets, wearables, the works. I asked him, it is the same story that we are discussing in this episode, right? The growing divide between the haves and the have-nots?
Yes, that's right. That's happening in devices space as well. That's where the premium goods across categories, including the phones, Samsung, Apple, in the premium categories, even the mid-premium has done well. A lot of upgraders from the volume segment have, you know, have gone there. The 25,000 to about 40,000 has grown by 20%, and above 40,000 has grown by 55%. While at the same time, less than $300 or which can be in Indian rupee, less than 20,000-25,000 rupees, is facing a lot of challenges because of the component cost has gone up. As a result, the consumer end price has gone up by about 25-30% across the board. The entry-level segment is about less than 50% of the market now, which it used to be about more than 50%, less than $150. So less than 12,000 rupees has dropped 8 percentage points. So you can call it a K-shaped growth in smartphones as well.
Cheaper phones, which were drivers of the market, shrinking to account for half its size. Premium phone sales surging. Like Manoj, Navkinder says this is unprecedented.
This is unprecedented in the sense that we have not seen premium market growing as much and the entry level not growing. So premium market is growing. Obviously, there's a base effect. It's a much smaller pie of the market, but it's growing in a declining market. So that means, obviously, that indicates to a K-shaped recovery, right?
And why is this happening?
The consumers are holding onto their phones longer because anything which is available at about 15,000-16,000 rupees about 2 years back is available at 20,000 rupees plus. People are holding onto their phones longer. The replacement cycle earlier used to be about 16 to 18 months. Now it's almost 2 years across segments. So, and the new-to-smartphone migration has stalled. The essentials have taken a front seat now versus about a year back, where people are not spending money on any other things, but now people are spending money, people are going back to offices, they're traveling more, so obviously the expenses are redistributed now. The share of the wallet of the smartphone has gone down.
Let's now go to a segment that's slightly more removed from the ambit of essential consumption, but one that's a definite indicator of personal wealth and prosperity: automobiles.
In India, and you heard it, we had the best ever year in terms of sales for BMW, for Mini, for Motorrad.
That's Jean-Philippe Perrin, Senior Vice President Sales for Asia Pacific at BMW, in an interview with my colleague Shelley Seth Mohile.
We have crossed the 11,000 barrier. We have grown more than 35% with BMW. So it's an excellent job and an excellent year done by the colleagues. We could have done more if we would have been able to supply more cars to India. We couldn't, unfortunately, difficult logistics. And in the end, we finished the year with also record order bank. India is just not another market. It's a very, very, very special market.
Indeed. And Perrin isn't talking about just BMW's base models. He's talking about a demand for the top of the top end.
India, at least what we notice, that's a very strong growth of the SUV sales, 60%, so almost twice quicker than the overall growth of sales. So it's a market that becomes more SUV, less sedan driven.
Here's another interview. Shelley speaking to Andre Konsberg, Vice President of Overseas Sales for Audi, and Balbir Singh, Head of Audi India.
So we had a very strong growth already, almost 30% last year. Yeah, I think, and we are planning again for this year, if everything goes well in terms of supply, we see also a high double-digit growth again for India. So we will come back to these figures. I have no doubt that at least we're going to see these 14,000 units. If the market is developing and stable and the economy is growing as it is, so the real portion would be just natural growth. But of course, we have to do some efforts.
So wait, by which year do you think that will happen? Before 2030, you were saying, but 2030 is still like a very
14,000, 15,000.
It should happen next couple of years.
Dealers, the investors are asking for the volume. So the, I think a five-digit figure for sure in the next couple of years.
Just like Paren, Singh says the highest demand is for the more expensive cars that Audi sells in India.
The highest growth that we are seeing in C&D segment, the top segment, the highest growth is there. And the point which you also mentioned, you know, pandemic has also changed things. People are ready to spend more. Let's say moving towards experiential marketing, more experiences than ownership.
Luxury car makers are expected to sell a record 42,000 cars in India this year. But this is just 1% of passenger vehicles in the country. So now, let's look at a segment that accounts for a much larger share. Two-wheelers. Sales of motorcycles and scooters have been declining month on month in 2023. Nikunj Sanghi is the former president of the Federation of Automobile Dealers Association and the biggest seller of motorcycles made by Hero MotoCorp.
Anirban, what really is happening is, and specifically at the entry level for two-wheelers, affordability is becoming a major cause of concern. The target customer is extremely price sensitive. They find that both the cost of acquisition and cost of operation have dramatically increased post-COVID. The cost of acquisition by almost 40% and the cost of operation by more than 40%, which is unaffordable for the category of customers that we are talking about, and specifically in tier 2, tier 3 cities, because they have a very limited budget. So I think they need to very carefully balance between the fund that they have available for food versus the fund that they would want to spend on mobility. And obviously, food takes precedence over mobility, and therefore we find footfalls in two-wheelers, specifically entry-level two-wheelers, have gone down dramatically.
As a veteran in this field, and you know, as someone who's been doing this and looking at up cycles and down cycles for so long, how do you see this? And also, how are your customers reacting? I mean, what are they telling you? If you could share that with our listeners, that really shows what's happening in that segment.
So Anirban, ever since I've been in business, I've always wanted to speak to my customers directly and understand what's happening with the customer, and therefore, how does it impact my demand? And in the area where we are, which is Alwar, which is called the Mewat belt. When it comes to two-wheelers, Alwar accounts for over 70% market share for Hero. So I think that's the kind of demand pull this brand has. So in these Mewat belt marriages, we have seen in the past that it's not just one motorcycle which is given, it's five at times, even 10 motorcycles which are given in a marriage. And I was talking to one of those sarpanches who has been frequenting our showroom for a number of years. And I came across and I said, Sarpanch saab, abhi to Mewat mein shaadiyan shuru ho gayi hai. And I don't see you people coming and buying two-wheelers the way you used to. And very matter-of-factly, he said, Sanghi saab, mera gaon yahan se 40 kilometer door hai. And just to come to your showroom and going back, I'll need 150 rupees. And if as a sarpanch I can feel that pinch, what would be happening to a normal farmer? But I said, what about marriages? He said, ki sab marriages ka to aap baat hi mat karo. Kyunki now when we even propose to give a bike in a marriage, pat comes the reply, ki with the bike, please give at least 1 year fuel along with the bike, only then we are willing to take. So this might sound funny, but this is the truth. This is the reality. This actually shows how the fuel costs are pinching the entry-level customer. The cost of operation is pinching the entry-level customer. And therefore, in spite of all efforts by OEMs, nothing exciting seems to be happening at the entry-level segment.
I asked him how long he sees this continuing.
Well, I don't immediately see an end to it because I might sound a little chauvinist, but I find that the have-nots are not having a very good day and the people who have are having a field day, and which shows in the demand at the premium side, the luxury side, and it's not just about two-wheelers, about everything, even telephones. Only the most expensive telephone sells, the most expensive variant of a car sells, and not the entry level. So I think it's the divide between the have and have-nots is deepening, which definitely is not a very comfortable situation to be in.
Coming up in this episode, businesses that are not indicators of this economic divide. Segments that are surging after the pandemic and despite inflation. Segments that are seeing heavy premium demand, but also not leaving behind the mass customers. Travel, hotels, and restaurants.
I guess in travel, we haven't really seen this trend as profound as you might have seen in the other categories.
That's Rajesh Mago, CEO of Make My Trip, India's biggest online travel company by revenue.
You know, if you look at the growth rate of, let's say, premium segment in hotels, you know, while people are booking for holidays, we've seen preferences going from, let's say, an earlier preference of 3-star to maybe now 4-star, or, you know, if the earlier preference was 4-star and now going to 5-star, we've definitely seen some of that trend.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't really mean that the mid-segment, at least in case of travel, the mid-segment hasn't really fully recovered. So we've actually seen mid-segment completely recovered as well. But, you know, one could say that on relative basis, the growth rate for premium was higher than the, you know, growth rate on the mid-segment. Now, having said all of this, I think the impact in travel that we have seen a little bit more in terms of recovery not coming back 100% is the ultra budget, less than 1,500, less than 1,000 rupee a room or 1,000 rupee a night kind of a segment. And that, to my mind, was also because, you know, partly like rates have gone up across the board. So to answer your question straight in summary, in travel, we haven't really seen this trend as profound as you might have seen it in the other categories.
Sporting events like the IPL, fancy weddings, corporate events, and a growing trend of staycations have ensured fairly high occupancy rates in hotels in 2022. The stock prices of four listed hoteliers, Indian Hotels that runs Taj and other brands, EIH that runs Oberoi and Trident, Lemon Tree and Chalet, outperformed the Sensex last year and their revenue grew 50% in FY23. But like Rajesh said, 2- and 3-star hotels and budget accommodations haven't been doing badly either. Oyo Rooms narrowed its losses last year and aims to become EBITDA positive in the current financial year. Domestic traffic has been growing, but demand for international travel has been growing even more, especially at the premium end.
In the international, we've seen the similar trend that we've seen in the hotels bookings, for example. So we've seen clear sort of trend in
right.
People, you know, looking for more comfort, premium economy and business class as well. I mean, that segment definitely. And, you know, I would again sort of attribute that to, because that segment, one, that can afford, and two, more importantly, there was no travel that happened in the last, you know, during COVID, right? So there is that desire to just, you know, either somebody has to go and visit family, or you have to do a business travel, or you have to just take a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up spending, relatively speaking, more. So I think we will have to, in all fairness, wait for, I guess, see one full year of steady state, which is going to be this fiscal year, before we sort of jump to any long-term trend conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my view.
Since the lockdown ended, people across the country seem to be eating out with a vengeance. Many eateries, especially quick service restaurants, could not survive the pandemic, but those that did have seen a huge upsurge in business. Listed restaurant companies such as Jubilant Foods that owns Domino's outlets, Devyani International and Burger King India all reported higher revenue in October-December.
The year post the pandemic, the upsurge in demand for restaurants across all segments, especially middle and upper, has been exponentially greater than it was in the preceding 6 years.
That's Manu Chandra, chef and restaurateur, former partner at Olive Group of Restaurants, and currently the co-founder of bespoke catering company Single Thread and fine dining restaurant Lupa.
So there was a euphoric embracing of F&B for the entire year, irrespective of which segment that restaurant was in. For whatever associations and contacts I have in the restaurant business, everybody was posting double-digit growths for that year. And of course, these were people who were reeling from the shocks of the last 2 years, you know, saddled with tremendous losses. Some of them could not survive it, but those who could were really, really showing business numbers that they had never seen before. And I don't think this was limited only to luxury. This was certainly greater in the middle segment. Let's take Bangalore, for example, where there's a very prolific and rich brewery culture. All these places are extremely large in size because of the way the legality around breweries is, microbreweries especially. You know, you need to be a minimum of 10,000 square feet, and yet there are those that are as big as 3 acres. All these places were running packed to the gills. Not only that, they were doing it Monday to Sunday. So there was a huge, huge upsurge in demand for F&B in places where people could congregate and meet and party. So I don't really think that the demand was specifically only for luxury. But yes, I think the demand in luxury went up even greater, given that the supply was finite.
Chandra, who caters to the highest echelons of society, told me that premiumization has caught on in a very big way in the restaurant and catering business. And it's not just limited to the big cities.
No, I don't think that tier one is the principal driver. There is also tier two, which is featuring prominently, and it surprised me as well. What has also surprised me is that there is a fair amount of newer wealth that exists in tier two cities, and they be more aspirational than a lot of people in the tier one cities. So we've done events in Coimbatore, in Chikmagalore. We have inquiries from Raipur and a bunch of others. So these are definitely tier two cities, and they are wanting us to create these incredible bespoke experiences by traveling to those cities and doing what we do. So I think demand isn't necessarily limited only to tier one cities.
Like Mago, Chandra too warns of inflationary pressures. Remember, both Domino's owner Jubilant Foods and Burger King India are in losses. Cost pressures are mounting. Soon, they may be compelled to hike food prices. And that may stop the price-sensitive Indian from ordering a pizza or burger every chance they get. Economic growth is never all-embracing, equitable, or even. But this time, its fruits seem to be more unfairly distributed than ever. Does that make it an economic growth at all? First, we are growing on a lower base of COVID-ravaged years. Second, if jobs, personal wealth, and purchasing power are stalled for a majority of the population, it will at some point dent overall growth numbers as well. But all is not dark. Credit growth is happening, especially for infrastructure projects such as airports and roads. Output in factories is rising. While these won't curtail inflation, they will hopefully create jobs for more people to fight price rises. Of course, macros will matter the most. What is happening to the consumer inflation and input index will matter. The government and RBI will have to step in to cool prices. But also, as Manoj says, the companies themselves will need to think of all their customers. They can't forget the mass market, the rural customer, the urban poor, just because the elite customer is paying them more per unit. All of this has to be done. Barring that, even if some recovery happens, even if the wide chasm between the rich and poor narrows just a bit, it will neither be permanent nor sustainable. You were listening to this episode on The Morning Brief. It was produced by Vinay Joshi, sound designer Rajas Naik. Executive producers Arijit Barman, Anupriya Nair, and myself. Big shout out to my colleagues, Ratna Bhushan Bakhchi and Shobori Das, for all the help. Do keep listening to The Morning Brief wherever you get your podcasts. This is Anirban Chaudhary wishing you a very good weekend. Thank you. Clips used in this episode belong to their owners. Credits are in the description.